If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Ben Bowling here with our one and only Auto Channel editor, Scott Benjamin. Scott, what's going on today?
Well, just kind of hanging out and ready to talk about cars with you. What's going on?
I am glad you were ready to talk about cars, my friend. So am I. I've actually got some specific questions here. We've got an article on the website, the top 10 everyday car technologies that came from racing. Are you familiar with this one, Scott?
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with it. Yeah, it's a good article.
Now, I thought so, too, and I wanted to kind of go in depth with you about this. One of the first questions that I asked when I read this was, how much money is spent on racing, would you say? Maybe...
Oh, my. That's probably an impossible question to answer, but it would be in hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, easy, if it doesn't touch $1 billion. I mean, it really does get up their highs. Even every manufacturer just blows piles of money on racing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
That's what I was thinking, because for these inventions to have to come from racing, there has to be a lot of money spent. And in some ways, it could almost be like research and development, right?
Oh, it's definitely research and development.
Oh,
it's
yeah?
It's like accelerated research and development. It's an intense environment, really. I mean, you know all about racing. I mean, it's very, very hard on cars. So you know, if they want to test something, develop something. Better be right the first time.
You
know,
right.
Somebody's life's at stake in that case, you know.
Right, quite literally.
Yeah.
Now, with that in mind, then, I like what you said about accelerated research and design here.
Mm-hmm.
All puns aside, I just got that now.
Yeah, okay.
But would these kind of innovations would they have eventually been invented without the benefit of racing?
I'm going to have to give you an I don't know on that one, but
yeah.
It's just too tough to say, but... Chances are they would have. It just would have been much slower.
You
kind of look at the development time of racing, and it is so quick. It's because they're not forced to, but in a way they are forced to create something that meets the immediate need that they have on the track. So you know, they need a way to slow this car down from 150 to zero. You know, much quicker than it was. Yeah, exactly. Much quicker than it was ever before. How are they going to do it? You know, that's when they came out with disc brakes. They've need a way to cram more air into an engine. They find a way to do it that way.
Okay.
Through racing. So it's like I said, it's just an accelerated pathway, I guess. It's it's forcing them to create something or to forcing them to develop new technology.
Like that old quote, how does it go? Necessity is the mother of invention. Something like that.
Racing perfects the breed or something like
that. Yeah, I guess the stakes are a little bit higher in an F1 than they are in a Corolla.
Yeah, slightly.
Okay,
that's
slightly.
Right. Slightly, but you'd be surprised how much of that technology, maybe not directly from F1 to that Corolla, but you'd be surprised how much of that technology from racing in the past has actually made its way into, let's say, a Corolla.
You know what? Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I was surprised and more than a few times checking this out. And I wanted to ask a couple questions about some of the specifics here.
Mm-hmm.
Without going through everything on the article, because mm-hmm. it's pretty in depth. I wanted to know. Car suspension is one of the things that they mention, and I know that they already had, manufacturers already had some sort of suspension system, right?
Of course, yeah. Even horse and buggies had some type of suspension. It was, you know, like a leather strap or something like that, but they had something, or it was bent metal, you know, made into kind of a rough spring.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, it was there, you know, from that point forward. So there was something there. It was very rough, and, you know, it wasn't really fine-tuned until racing came about. And then people started saying, well, there's got to be a way for me to get around this track a little better, a little faster, a little easier. It had nothing to do with comfort. Comfort has no place, really, in racing.
Right.
So, I mean, you can imagine, you know, there's not much suspension travel in, you know, like, let's say an F1 car or, you know, even, I guess, stock cars. What they're all about, really, is they're all about tuning. They're all about, specifically getting that vehicle to do what they want it to do. And if that's turn left, they want it to turn left really well. Mm-hmm. You know, they may not care about turning right on a track
okay,
where they only have
right.
to turn left. So they're concerned more with straight line and left turns. And, you know, in F1 and IndyCar where, you know, the suspensions are really open, you know, you see these the arms kind of that go out to the different to the
oh,
wheels.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's part of the suspension you're looking at right there.
Oh.
And they've even developed those pieces to be aerodynamic. So, you know, they're constantly just fine-tuning all of this so that, you know, it's a perfect suspension, really, for that vehicle.
Okay, so is the difference then, I guess, the one of sophistication and one of customization?
Yeah,
point?
I guess that's probably a good way to look at it. I mean, but they're very, very, they're all very custom.
Mm-hmm.
Every race car has an extremely custom suspension setup. I mean, that's they pay somebody to do just that, to set up the suspension for the vehicle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's definitely custom.
That sounds like a niche job right there.
Definitely, yeah, yeah. And you know, some of the advancements that were made on the track, they figured out a way that you know they could, I guess, make that marketable or make that you know something that you could put into a street car, and somebody would say, hey, yeah, I'd like that because, you know, that gives me the ability to adjust this the way I want to and give me the ride that I want. Now, street cars have a little bit more, you know, comfort concern. You don't want you don't want a rough riding car like that. Now, some people, you know, they don't mind that. But
and some people want to turn right.
Yeah, that's right. Some people occasionally want to turn right.
Yeah.
Crazy as it sounds. Yeah.
Right. Another one that I saw there that struck me kind of in the same way was I read about engine air intake,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I wanted to know what made this different in racing because I understood that the auto manufacturers or even just standard internal combustion engine makers already knew that engines needed air.
Well, absolutely, Ben. What manufacturers found or what, you know, engine makers found, of course, they knew that, you know, engines needed air. They needed a lot of air to run. And in racing, of course, under the hood, it gets very, very hot very, very quickly. And up until that point, you know, most of the air intake was coming through there. It was coming, you know, through the front of the car, maybe through a grill, something like that. You know, it was pretty relatively warm air underneath the hood. And that was hurting their horsepower. So they found out that, you know, if they somehow get cool air to be kind of forced into that engine, you know, in some way. And that's why you see some of these scoops on top of the hood.
The things that kind of go up over
the... that's right. And sometimes they're down low and sometimes they're on the sides. And, you know, they're kind of in different places. If you have a mid-engine car, a rear-engine car, the intake may be on the roof of the car, you know, where it allows it to come, you know, over the top and down into the engine.
I've seen
or
those.
Maybe even the sides, like, you know, maybe near the wheels,
mm-hmm.
The rear wheels. So they found out quickly that, you know, the cooler the air, the better the horsepower was, the faster the car would run. You know, it was just better for the engine.
Okay. All right. Well, what's interesting about that is those scoops that you're talking about here could be seen on a lot of, as we said, mass-produced cars now.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of them, though, you got to be kind of cautious about that. Some of them are just decorative.
Some of them are purely cosmetic?
Most of them really are.
Most of them?
Yeah, there are very few that are really functional.
Oh,
you know, the functional ones work really well, and, you know, they're designed to do that, but a lot of them are just, you know, for looks, really.
Well, still, I guess that still counts as at least the illusion of an innovation. from racing.
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah.
Well, speaking of things that you can see just on the body of the car, I think what got me, and I'm pretty sure that you'll know what I'm talking about specifically here, what got me, there are a couple things I look on cars, and I just think these should have always been there,
mm-hmm.
but they're, what else is there that you could just look at a car and it actually came from racing?
Well, actually, you could just probably look at the shape of the car and find that, you know, that probably in some way comes from racing. Mm-hmm. If you look at the cars, you know, I don't know, I guess you can go all the way back to, you know, the turn of the century, the 20th century, I should say. you know, the cars were very flat on the front. They were very boxy. Really, they look like, like horse carriages, you know, with engines.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a good reason for that.
Because I guess that's what they were.
That's
huh?
exactly right, yeah. But, you know, as time went on, you know, and as racing kind of found out, you know, they made these streamline racers. And, you know, you notice that streamline shapes tend to do better on,
yes.
you know, let's just say, for aerodynamics, mileage, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You see that in a lot of cars now, and you don't even think about it. It's just kind of like, you know, the shape you take for granted. It's not real boxy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not real flat. Everything has kind of got a point to it, or maybe a rounded edge to it. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for all that.
I think that makes sense. I was also really surprised in the article. It mentions the advent of mirrors, rear view mirrors.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, mirrors. And
those came from racing?
Yeah, they did. Rear view mirror did, and it's, I guess it's not official. It's kind of unofficial because, you know, it's just a, you know, someone said this, or, you know, it was documented at the time that this happened. But the very first Indianapolis 500, in fact, the winner of the race, Ray Haroon, he used a rearview mirror for possibly the first time it was ever attached to a vehicle, or anybody ever saw a rearview mirror attached to a vehicle. And the reason was because he couldn't find a riding mechanic to ride with him during the race. So he, you know, he had to, it was kind of a workaround in his case. He said, well, I've got to have some way to look behind me during the race, because normally that was the job of the riding mechanic. So he, you know, attached this mirror to his dash.
Now, hang on a second. Yeah. It was the riding mechanic. I'm sorry to interrupt. The riding mechanic just sat with the driver?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
his job was to turn around?
Way back in the day, yeah, that's right. The riding mechanic would watch traffic for the driver as well. And, you know, of course, fix the odd flat that happened on the track, you know, if they were on the other side or something.
So he did more than just act as the
human. Yeah, he was truly a mechanic. He really was a mechanic. Okay. But he was also, I guess, an acting spotter.
Wow, yeah, okay. It just seemed like such a forehead smack moment to me, you know, to be someone making or mass producing cars and then say, oh, some way they can look behind themselves.
Yeah, that's right. I was never really thought of before that. And, you know, he didn't get credit for inventing it or anything. You know, that happened later. I think it was 3 or 4 years later that someone actually got credit for putting them on street use vehicles.
Okay.
This is a race car we're talking about.
Right, right.
And, you know, he probably just did it right in the pits the day of the race or something like that.
Kind of improvised.
But the driver did admit later that he had seen it used on a horse and carriage some years prior to that. So it was somebody else's idea. This is the first time it was on or ever really seen on a racing vehicle. And then, you know, 3 or 4 years later, it finally took off on production vehicles.
Well, what do you think is the most important technology that's come from racing?
Without a doubt, safety.
Safety?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, our article will back that up. It's safety. And I really stand behind that. I think that's something that's on the top of everybody's mind when they're in racing. You know, some cars are going 240, 220, you know, 200 miles an hour, whatever it is. You want to be safe. You want your person, you know, the person that's occupying that car to be safe. And, you know, so they're completely surrounded by roll bars and roll cages, and they've got safety devices, you know, the straps that hold their, you know, head, mm-hmm. so that it's called the Hans device, holds their head kind of back so it doesn't snap forward. It's just a variety of safety devices that are in cars.
You know what, now you mentioned, I remember seeing that mm-hmm. as the number one entry. And if some of our listeners might recall from an earlier podcast, we mentioned that a blink can cost you, what was that, more than 35 feet?
That was something like that, yeah. I think it was 37 feet, I think was what it was at the time. Yeah,
you're the expert.
It's pretty fast.
Yeah.
That's pretty fast.
So yeah, I can see that.
But really, safety is the big deal, and honestly, the technology that comes from the track does make it into the cars. You don't see it. It's covered by the dash and, you know, the maybe the carpet in the car. You have, mm-hmm. you know, maybe comfier padded seats, but, you know, it's all there. They've just, you know, kind of covered it up so that, you know, it's not. So if you look at the interior of a race car, It looks very raw. It looks very open. You know, it's not very finished. Of course, when you buy a car, you want it to be very very clean, very nice. You know, the interior is a big deal to a lot of people, and you're going to spend a lot of time in there. But it is safe. It's just covered up, that's all.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So other things like, I guess, crumple zones, would that be a good example?
Oh, crumple zones. Yeah, crumple zones came from racing as well. You know, they I don't know if they're directly from that or not, but, you know, that plays a big part in racing because, you know, what else are you going to have to protect yourself from, you know, this wall that's coming at you at 180 miles an hour? You need some space between you and that wall.
Yeah.
Well, you've got your car, and you don't want it to be totally rigid. You want it to crumple. So, you know, you'll find that a lot of the cars will just... Have you ever seen the wrecks on TV where, you know, the car just seems to blow apart? There's just nothing
left.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. And you think there's no way that that guy or girl is going to live through that wreck.
Right.
Okay, that is probably, that's a good example of a crumple zone or, you know, this force, this energy being drawn away from the person inside, really. The car is accepting all of that energy. It's blowing itself apart in order to save the occupant. The crumple zones are... You know, like this area. Let's say it's like in between the, you know, the front windshield. The easiest way to say it would be, if you see a car that's been in a front end wreck, the front end might collapse totally, right, all the way up to where the windshield is, but nothing beyond that. Yeah, that gives that kind of absorbs a lot of that energy, so that, you know, the driver doesn't accept the full brunt, you know, the full force of that wreck.
Okay, because it sounds like these innovations mainly are designed for survival rather than comfort or amenity.
That's right. You can't. You just cannot be going, you know, 200 miles an hour, come to a dead stop, and expect to live. You have to slow down. You have to slow that down. There's just no other way to do it. You have to.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for coming by and filling us in on this. I had no idea that so many things in, you know, even a little hatchback like mine actually are descended from these racing technologies.
Oh, yeah, they're really intertwined. Yeah, everything is.
Okay, I guess we should also let our listeners know that if they want to find out anything else about race cars or racing or cars in general, they can check out our auto channel on HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Welcome to season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.